I'm going to start. This is a special talk called A Living Hope. And I want to start with the big idea for the message, which is this. God is alive, active, and deeply for you, meeting you where you are. As you surrender and trust Him, you find a freedom and a hope that goes beyond what you can manufacture on your own. That's a long, normally you try to make it fit on a t-shirt. This is a long, big idea. But I think it's significant. God is alive, active, and deeply for you. He's meeting you where you are. As you surrender and trust Him, you will find freedom and hope that goes beyond what you can manufacture on your own. We're going to unpack that this morning. We say He is risen, and we mean it. We get excited at Easter. It's new, it's different. We're doing fun things with the kids, and there's food, or you know, there's treats, and there's new people, new faces that are coming. And there's like this energy. You may be going from here to spend time with friends or family, getting to celebrate, getting just to be together. And then tomorrow comes. And then the next day. And the day after that. And that Easter kind of celebration gets replaced by grief that still exists. The relationship that's broken, our anger, our hurt, or our frustration, that version of yourself that you were hoping to leave behind is still struggling. And pretty quickly, Easter can feel like a celebration of something that happened. But Easter isn't just about what has happened, but about what is happening. A living hope isn't just a destination for the future. It's not just a promise of eternity. It's a God who is moving right now toward you personally. And it started on Friday. Because on Friday is when He knew the full weight of what we're going through. Jesus didn't observe our pain from a distance on Friday. He stepped into it. Isaiah 53, verses 4 through 5 says this, "Yet it was our weakness He carried. It was our sorrows that weighed Him down. He was pierced for our rebellion, crushed for our sins. He was beaten so that we could be whole. He was whipped so we could be healed." He took our pain. He bore our suffering. This isn't a God who watches from a distance and offers advice just in a book. He entered the mess with us. He knows what you're carrying because He carried it first. That's what Friday was. But I think there's a question that goes underneath all of that. And if you've ever been in a dark place, I think you've probably asked it. And it's probably not the question. I think sometimes we focus on this idea, is God real? We're trying to reason, like, if God's real, if He actually died on the cross for my salvation or for my sins, am I the eternity question? We sit with that, or we think that that's actually the question. But I actually think that that's not the one that we tend to wrestle with the most. I think the one that we wrestle with more is He for me? Does he actually care about what I'm going through? The real barrier to surrender isn't doubt about the resurrection or doubt about if Jesus was real. It's about whether or not it was meant for you or for someone like you. The answer is he is for you. I think in those dark moments, there's often questions that linger. There are lies that start to kind of consume us from the inside out that make us question whether or not God is for us. The first one is, I have to prove myself first. Before God can be for me, I have to be better than I am right now. God doesn't want my brokenness. I'm stuck in addiction. I'm stuck doing the same repetitive thing over and over and over again to myself, and I can't break that cycle. There's no way that a God is going to love me where I'm at right now. Man, I have to know more. I don't know enough about God, so there's no way that I can actually put my faith or my trust in him because I just don't know him. I have to study more. I have to pray more. I have to go to church more. I have to try to prove myself first before God will love me, before God will accept me. I think the second one that often comes up in my head, I'm not sure he can really change me. I've been dealing with anger for so long, and bitterness and brokenness in relationships, being hurt by other people. I don't think I can ever let that go. And every time I try, and I try, and I fail, I just feel like I'm right back where I started. God doesn't really care about me. And then that often leads, that lie just goes deeper, and it leads to, I'm not worth it. I'm not worth it. When we start believing those lies, it makes it hard for us to trust God. It makes us hard to surrender our life to God. Trusting God has been the thing that I've struggled with the most throughout my life. And it's different. Again, this isn't questioning whether or not God was real or my salvation was real. I can hold my theology, my beliefs about God, that I'm saved, that his death and his resurrection on the cross, that he paid this price of my sins, and then I get to spend eternity with him. I know that to be true. But actually trusting God with my life, that's a different story. It was about 15 years ago when my father-in-law passed away. And I've shared this story before, but it was probably the darkest kind of moment in my life. I'm trying not to look at my mother-in-law right now. I didn't know she was going to be here. When he passed away, not only had he passed away, but my mentor, who was a father figure as well, had passed away. The job and the career that I thought I was going to do for the rest of my life, that I felt called to do, had been taken away. I was working a part-time job selling phones, which was great. I love the fact that I had that opportunity, but let me tell you, it is about the mind-numbingest thing you could do, and it was not my career path. I did not want to be a salesman. Because of my job, I wasn't going to church consistently. I couldn't be at church on Sundays. I had to be at work. And I just felt, everything felt heavy. Everything started kind of piling on. Life was just kind of at this, I was at this dark point spiritually where I was just questioning everything. And I remember sitting there and those three lies just kept coming in. I hadn't proved myself. Man, maybe I just didn't work hard enough when I was in the job that I wanted. I didn't fight hard enough for it. It actually seemed like the harder I fought, the more it got stripped away. I kept dealing with just anger and hurt and frustration. Relationships with people that I was so close to when I was in my other career, they were gone. I felt alone. And it just led to that, I'm not worth it. God, I know you're going to fix all this when I get to be with you in heaven. But man, I don't know if I can trust you right now. Because trusting or surrendering means trusting that he is for me, not the version of me I'm trying to become, but the one he already knows. That's a big distinction. I'm going to say that again. Because trusting or surrendering means trusting that he is for me, not the version of me I'm trying to become, but the one he already knows. Romans 5:8 says this. It says, but God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners. The timing in that verse is everything. He didn't wait for you to be cleaned up. He didn't wait for you to have all the answers. He didn't hold out until you proved yourself. He moved towards you at your worst. And that's not a posture of somebody who's keeping score, who says you're not worth it. That's a posture of a God who is genuinely, deeply for you. Romans 8:11 says this, the Spirit of God who raised Jesus from the dead lives in you. The same power that raised Jesus from the dead is living in you right now. And if he can handle death, he can handle what you're carrying today. Here's what happens is that when you begin to trust, really trust that God is for you, something starts to shift. Not because life gets easier. I think that's a false prophet that says, hey, put your trust in Jesus and you're going to get everything you've ever desired. Give more money to the church and your riches are going to be given to you tenfold in return. Life is going to be easy. There's nowhere in the Bible that is said. Trusting God isn't about life getting easier, but it is about the fact that you are no longer carrying things alone. You are no longer carrying the weight of your brokenness, of the world around you alone when you start to trust him. Which leads us to a hope that is alive. That's what we talk about, a living hope. Is that it's a God who is alive and he's active and he's working and he's moving through you. He's joining you in your life. Surrendering to Jesus isn't giving something up, it's stepping into freedom and life you can't find any other way. Do we do that? We're struggling, and so we try to find the solution. We try to seek it out. Maybe it's a new job, or it's It's a new relationship, or it could be found in a bottle, or it could be found in a new activity or a sport or a hobby. But we try to make ourselves better because we feel so bad. But when we talk about freedom, when we talk about joy, and we talk about direction, that can only come from our partnership with God. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says this, "Anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone and the new life has begun." Not who you'll be someday. It's who you are right now, in process, living in a new partnership with God. 1 Peter 1:3, I always like in movies, like a good movie, is that moment in the movie when the thing, when the action is the most intense or it's the most emotional part, and then they say the title of the name of the movie in the movie. It's like, okay, that was what it was all about. It was that moment. That's what happened in 1 Peter 1:3. It says, "In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead." A living hope isn't fragile. It breathes. It responds. It meets you in the middle of hard things. Not just as the at the end of it. God doesn't promise easy, but he promises presence. God doesn't promise easy, but he promises presence. And because he's alive, that presence is active, moving, and deeply, deeply personal. So you might be sitting here saying, okay, I want to say yes. I want to say yes to that. I want to have that personal relationship with God. And then there's always another thing that gets in the way, which is to say yes and to trust God means that we have to what? We have to give up control. That's scary. The hardest part of trusting God isn't the first yes, it's the ongoing yes. It's releasing the grip on what we think our life is supposed to look like, the plan we had, the timeline we built, the version of our story we were sure was the right one. I am a walking poster boy for thinking I knew what my life was going to look like, and God saying, "You haven't seen anything yet." Back 15 years ago, it started when we found out Megan was going to be born. Because we had tried for 12 years of our 15-year marriage to have a child, and it wasn't happening, and we'd given up. And I remember even, like, we were starting to look into adoption or just other ideas, but we had lived so long without that opportunity or hope. And then all of a sudden, found out we're pregnant with a pretty amazing girl. It happened again. So again, when I say the continued yes, 5 years ago, I felt like God was saying, "Hey, I want more. I have more for you. I want you to start trusting me," because I had just kind of gotten into this thing again where I was comfortable. Life was okay. I was staying home with Megan. Getting to be a stay-at-home dad was super fun. And I was sitting there and I was like, "This is great. I get to do this. I get to hang out with my wife at events for our church and for our denomination. I get to be a part of a church again. Life's good. I don't need anything else." And then God's like, Brian, I'm not done with you. I need you to trust me here. Okay, and I remember sitting in my boss's office. He wasn't my boss at the time, but he was Julie's. And I sat in his office and I just said, God's asking me to trust him with some next steps, but I don't know what that means. He goes, I think you should start trusting God. You should say yes. And when I tell you that, I mean, it's been just about a year now that I've been the lead pastor of Main Street. Being a lead pastor of a church was never on my bingo card. It was never part of the plan. It was never something that I said, man, I just hope one day that I could have a 100-year-old building that's fallen apart, that I can have to try to rebuild a church that has been restarted multiple times with multiple leaders and has gone through hills and valleys that are both amazing and some of the hardest things ever. And I'm like, I want to sign up for that. Like, I want that thing. But here's what I'll tell you. Is that as I have started to lean in, and I've just said yes to God, that path has been so clear. And I can look back and I can say, man, over the last 4 or 5 years, God has been preparing me for this moment right here, right now, for this role, for however long I get to be the lead pastor. But it goes deeper than that. It goes deeper because what I realized, trusting God isn't just about surrender and just into the unknown. It's not about like just blindly kind of going, man, I hope I find my way and not trip. Surrendering to God is actually a stepping into a partnership with God. Because God isn't asking you to hand over the wheel. It's not Jesus, take the wheel time. God is saying where you disappear into the back seat and he's just in full driver mode and you're just kind of like, just, you know, trying to find your way. He's inviting you to walk with him, to cooperate with what he is already doing in your life. And when you start to do that, it's not that you're losing yourself, it's the most alive you will ever feel. Because you start to step into the full life that God intended for you from the very beginning. A life that Jesus says in Matthew 11:30, which is to learn to live freely and lightly. This last year has not been a cakewalk. Again, stepping into this role, stepping into, it's everything's new. It's radically changed the way our family has to engages each other because I'm not staying home. I'm not home on spring break. I'm not able to do the things I was doing before as a stay-at-home dad. My daughter's gone, hey, are you ever going to come home on some nights when I'm working and have events? There's sacrifice and things that have happened. And it's at times the weight feels heavy and I start to go back to those lies. Man, I'm not good enough. I have to prove myself. But then I'm reminded that God's invitation is to partner with him, to walk alongside of him. And when I start doing that, there's a freedom. There's a lightness. That's what God's offering. God's offering to walk with you through whatever the next season of your life is with a peace that only comes from the work that he's doing in you and through you. I want to invite the worship team up. We're going to move to a time of communion. And this is a celebratory communion because we are charged in the Bible to remember what God did for us on the cross. And to be reminded every time that we break the bread of what God did for us to release us and to provide freedom for us to be that active living God. And when we dip it into the juice, that his blood was poured out for our sins, but that the tomb is empty today, that we get to celebrate his resurrection. And I just want to leave us with a couple of encouragements as we go. Because if there's people in the room right now that have not said yes, the first yes, that haven't said the first yes to God, maybe you came today and you're like, I'm not even sure why I'm here, but it's Easter and that's what we do, go to church. If that's you, I just want you to know how much Jesus deeply loves you. I just want you to know how much he wants to be active in your life. And I want to invite you to say yes for the first time. Not because you have it figured out, not because you're ready even, but know that he's already moved towards you. And now the question is whether you'll let him meet you where you are. So if that is you, I want to just invite you, as we start to go to worship and we go to communion, come to the communion table. Make that your yes. Take the bread, dip it in the wine, or the juice, it's not wine, represents wine. And then I want to just encourage you, if that is you and you did that, to follow it up by telling somebody. It could be somebody that you came with, it could be somebody you know that maybe is following Jesus, and just say, hey, this is what happened today. You can also just fill out a connect card and drop it in the box, because we want to hear that you are saying yes to Jesus today. But there's probably a lot of folks here who have put your faith in Jesus, but you're holding back that trust for one reason or another. There's been a thing that's preventing you from taking that next step of saying, I want to surrender my life to you. But when you're honest about it, you just keep him at an arm's length. You manage your faith instead of surrendering to it. Maybe what you're holding on to is control. You're walking around with your faith and it's just like this, white knuckling it. My encouragement to you, and maybe the thing that you need to sit with as we go to communion, is to acknowledge that thing or things that you are trying to control. And you can even, if you're just quietly sitting there in worship, maybe you ball your fist up and imagine that you're holding on to it. And then say, I want to give up that control to God. I'm going to give that to you. And let your hands just open up to him as you take communion. Maybe today is the day to lay that down, not as a failure, but as honesty. I believe, but I haven't trusted you with this. This is where the deeper life begins. It's where we experience freedom. It's where we experience his presence. And I just want to close the way we started with the main idea, which is God is alive, active, and deeply for you. Meeting you where you are, as you surrender and trust him, you will find freedom and hope that goes beyond what you can manufacture on your own.